If we ever had a family movie, it's probably that one about how 9/11 was an inside job.
And I looked over at him, and he looked over at me with his whiskey, and he goes, "When boys were bloody men."
Give him a call. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm in Ohio." And he said it so casually. He said it like, "Yeah, I'm going to be a little late. I'm just going to need to go to Canada real quick."
Fuck you, Dad!
Oh, everybody, you know what it is. Welcome to another episode of Fuck You, Dad. Another very special episode. If we keep having special episodes, Kenyon, I think we're going to become a special podcast.
Might be a thing.
I think we might
have a Patreon. I have to quit the day job.
Yeah.
Parents might be proud of you. The whole fucking 9 yards.
It really might happen if we keep doing these special episodes. But we've got a very funny comedian. He just released an album last year, AFK, and it's fucking hilarious. Everyone, wherever you are, give it up for Mike Kaplan.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor, and I hope I don't mean to be like your dad and come in all like strict and be like, now you've got to do your homework just a little bit more, because I do appreciate your promoting my album that came out last year. I understand that you've got F's on the brain.
Yes.
And as such, you put an F in the title where there is no F. The title is AKA. You had the A and the K, 100%.
Did I say AFK? Like
I
away from
you said. I thought you said like AK-47. You're just throwing no shit out there. You're just. I when you said that, I'm like, that's not the name of an album. Like, I didn't want to say that out loud. I'm like, what the fuck is Mike Kaplan on?
Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
It was a good day. I didn't have to use my AFK, FNAK, but yeah. So I really appreciate it. I'm effing proud of my album, FNAKA, you know?
That's awesome. I really did appreciate it, and I know you talk about you went on a help me out here, Kenyon.
Ayahuasca retreat.
Thank you. Yeah. An ayahuasca retreat, and I am dying to hear about, because my friends want me to do that too, and I am a terrified little boy. So
I understand. Well, I mean, too bad this show isn't all about moms, because people often refer to ayahuasca as like mother ayahuasca or the grandmother.
Right.
But yeah,
nice.
So sorry. All I can tell you is about the plant called San Pedro, which I believe is the father to ayahuasca's mother. And it's actually a little more chill, the experience that I had with it.
Really?
But here's the thing is, I mean... if you want to have this experience, they say that, you know, ayahuasca releases DMT into your brain, which is in your brain, and maybe it is what's responsible for the visions that people have sort of at the end of their life as you die, perhaps while you dream, maybe while you're born, you know, maybe all throughout, depending who you are. But and I can understand why that might terrify a person. But, you know, like, life is terrifying by itself. So,
you're right.
You know,
yes, it is.
Why not just exchange one the terrifying reality for the terrifying dreamscape that are your insides. But
it's like the best like manic drug dealer I've ever heard. Yeah. Just scared kid out of middle school. He's like, just exchange one terrifying reality for another, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel nervous. He's just shoving mushrooms in his mouth.
Oh,
just asking you to swap reality, son.
And that's the thing about, I feel like I grew up like not specifically with the DARE program, but definitely with, you know, like fear-inducing drug, like anti-drug education. Like with the idea that I feel like there were after-school specials kind of programs that are like, look out, people are going to try to give you drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to say no. And I feel like the way that people are with drugs, and drugs is such a broad term, drugs mean so many things, but for the most part, people want money for their
drugs.
They're
very insistent on it. I've tried. Yeah. I've tried to just have people hand it to me. It never happened.
You should go into like a dark alley or into the woods or into, you know, a pharmaceutical company and be like, I understand people are just giving away drugs.
Yeah.
And maybe pharmaceutical companies are like, you can have a couple of these, but then you're going to have to pay up.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I think
those after school specials always made it the drug dealer look incredibly like it would. Sometimes it wouldn't even be vague. It would just be a snake and it would be like, you own drugs.
A snake with a trench coat. And you're like, how is it even holding the?
Yeah.
Is it like three snakes in, or like eight snakes in a trench coat behaving like three children who are trying to sell drugs to other snake children? But and they, you know what they should have done is not had them on after school. They should have had them on. They should have been during school specials. Do you know what I mean? Because for a during school special, that'll get the kids who are cutting school and watching TV. But the kids who are after school be like, well, I should be able to relax. But
yeah, have and watch you... Saved by the Bell like a normal person.
Yeah. Have you personally, have you done any mind altering sort of the quote drugs, like psychedelic type things, and just not yet this particular one? Or are you terrified of all things?
No. I am terrified of all things. Let's get that
out of the way.
That's a first. That's always my first emotion whenever something new enters my life, is pure terror.
It's fear, fear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As you do.
But no, I've done mushrooms and acid.
You've done the Holy Trinity: mushrooms, acid, Molly.
I've done the Holy Trinity.
I've done the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
Rolled this weekend. I thought it was a great time. Quite honestly.
Forgot all about it.
I remember.
Mushrooms, acid, Molly. That's another M-A-M, another sort of mom kind of thing on this dad
mother.
Podcast. Yeah. And I guess that's what you got to do, is get the dad trinity in there, which is DMT and DMT, D-A-D. So
Another one of my friends swears by DMT, and he was like, I spoke to these beings who had the whole world under their control, and they were saying, all we need to do is love each other. And I was like, that sounds incredible just coming from your mouth. I mean, do I really have to, you know, change, like, lose my ego and shit?
Yeah.
Like, it was nice hearing you say that. And he's a guy who normally doesn't, he ran over my head with a snowboard when we were kids. Like, he's not a one love kind of kid. But DMT, I think it could help those kind of folks, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, number one, I'll say you don't have to do it. That's definitely for sure. You needn't. But also, I feel like maybe the experience that he had with DMT was maybe he got visited by, it's not necessarily, like, people definitely have experiences where it seems like they're speaking to other beings, where sometimes my understanding is that it could be, you know, they say, like, in dreams, like, you might be visited by people who aren't you in your dream. You might have experiences with people who aren't you, but you're like, maybe each person, because you're invoking them, it's like some aspect of yourself. Like, if your mother is in your dream, it's like, oh, maybe it's the motherly part of yourself. If it's a particular friend in your dream, maybe what does that friend represent to you? Maybe it's that part of yourself. And so, you know, maybe he's visiting, like, the alien parts of himself. Like, the ayahuasca guide that I've gone to always says things like this is not going to make you more powerful. It's not going to, like, reveal to you necessarily, like, all the secrets of the universe. It's not going to make you anything compared to anybody else. It's going to help tell you where you are, help you discover where you are right now. And so maybe for your friend, maybe this guy who ran over your head with a snowboard.
He wouldn't be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just
another Minnesota funeral.
A slow board, I like to say. Maybe he had his first DMT experience and was visited by a part of himself who exhibited maybe regret for that. He's like, maybe that's why he's more of a one love person now. Yeah. He's like, we really should be loving each other and not running each other over with snowmobiles or snowboards or any. Let's not run each other over at all.
With any recreational vehicles. That would be a good rule.
It's a good rule of thumb.
So, Mike, when did you start getting into, like, tripping and all that kind of stuff? Were you, like, as a teenager, were you doing that, or did it take
a while? Great question. In fact, so my mom and my dad, I'm an only child, my mom and dad, who were together until I was about 13 or so, 13, 14.
Oh, wow.
Even when they split up, when they divorced, they were like, well, you know, we love you both, and we're both here for you, and this has nothing to do with you. You know, this isn't your fault. And I was like, I mean, of course. How could it be my fault? But I was like, why are you even saying that?
Yeah, this makes me feel like it's kind of my fault a little bit.
Just for you saying
it. That didn't even enter my brain. You're like, dude, it's not your fault just because of the strain of your existence tore us apart, even though we were madly in love for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't even...
Like, I'm not in your bedroom. Like, I didn't fail to give you an orgasm for the last 10 years. This is my fucking fault. You know?
Exactly. Were you there for this talk? That
I don't
exactly
know.
Every
divorced person is like, it's not your fault. You're like, I never entered that into my... They're like, like my parents split up. Like, I'm like, I know it's not my fault. It's your fault for thinking this could ever work.
There are circumstances in which the parents don't say that, where, you know, maybe they're like, you know, like, maybe the child did introduce some, you know, instability in the relationship. Like, obviously, it's not like the child didn't choose it, didn't actively do anything. But there are children who don't understand what's going on, and maybe everyone could benefit. It's way better from, like, here's an analogy. Like, if I, sometimes I'll meet a person who I haven't, or like run into a person who I haven't seen in a long time, and I always like it when, if somebody, if I don't remember them, or even if I do, if they're like, hey, like, what, actually what you did, Nick, when you're like, hey, you might not remember this, but we did, like, we did a show together years ago, and it would be actually weird if you did remember it. Like, that's a very, like, hospitable, inviting way to be, as opposed to, like, one time I did a show, and afterwards a guy came up to me, and he was like, hey, remember me? And I was like, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I run into a lot of people, a lot of places. Will you give me a hint? And he's like, come on. Oh. And I was like, you come on? And I never found out who he was. So I like it much better. And that's why we all are. And children of the ultimate dad god. And dad god, like dad bod, as you will. The dad bod, the dad son. Anyway, so the Holy Ghost dad, which is a movie that we don't watch anymore. But I really like it when...
Wait. I'm sorry, Mike, to cut you off. Yes. Is that a real movie, Holy Ghost Dad?
No. I mean, Ghost Dad is a movie.
Ghost Dad?
Yeah. Ghost Dad is a Bill Cosby movie.
Oh, it got worse from the title.
Yeah. Just mysteriously comes over your body.
What a terrifying ghost to have.
Yeah, God.
I mean, at the time, we had no idea how terrifying it would come to be. Yeah. So, the unholy Ghost Dad now, I guess.
Devil Dad.
So, I like it when sometimes it'll go like this. If I run into you and I remember you and I'm like, hey, but I'm not sure you're going to remember me. I'm like, hey, I'm Mike. Just, you know, and I love it when it's way better for them to be like, of course I know who you are. Of course, rather than risk being like, will you? Like, you know, it's kind of awkward and embarrassing. I'm so sorry. Like, way better to offer more information than less information. And now I forget what this is an analogy to, but it was something.
Yeah, it was about the divorce. In divorce, when they're like, it's not your fault.
Exactly,
and it's like
exactly.
Nice to throw that out there so they don't even think. But
yeah. Exactly. Thank you so much. Better. Is it Kenyan? Did I make that up?
No.
It does sound.
That's
made
great. It's great when someone remembers. What, like, that can't be it. That's not a person's
name. Like, you win a lot of marathons. I don't know what this is.
There we go.
This is sort of like we're going pretty fast here. We got it. Let's slow and steady. Mm-hmm. So I would much rather. It's much better to tell a child that it's not their fault when it's not their fault, and have them be like, "Of course," you know. And that sort of maybe builds up self-esteem as well, but. This is all to say that my parents were very, like, it was very, like, don't do drugs, don't drink, don't smoke cigarettes. And I still, to this day, like, maybe I've taken in some tobacco, like, while, you know, smoking some other thing that had tobacco in it. But I've never smoked a nicotine cigarette to this day, because I'm like, yeah, they were right about that. And drinking, I actually don't really do anymore for the last several years, not specifically because I'm in recovery, not that I'm, like, sober technically. It would be fine. I can have a drink. I just, drinking doesn't do it for me the way, like, I don't feel that I need it, but like, and so, but I did in college, I tried drinking and I was like, oh, drinking is okay if you do it, an amount that's okay and you can, and it's different for everybody.
It's hard to
and
figure then, it out.
But drugs,
so it's
you know,
a
the
long
idea of,
lesson
like,
for some people.
Yeah, yeah.
As we,
drinking, as we drink the PBR at 4 p.m., but.
But the, over here it's 5 p.m., so it's, you know, they say it's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's literally the 5 o'clock hour here. I'm where I am. But the idea of drugs, so smoking, drinking, drugs, that was the one that, like, lingered with me the most because of, I guess, you know, in my family and in our society, the fear that is associated with it, that, like, when I was, like, 23, 24, I was dating a woman, and she was very high on pot. She was high on the concept of getting high because she was a musician and a creative person, and she was like, she found value in it. And I, even then, I was like, I don't really want to, kind of weirdly, because one of my main reasons for, at the time, not wanting to do it, I was like, it doesn't, like, I've been fine without it. I don't think that I need it. And also, I'm like, if I have kids, like, what if I want to tell them with a clear conscience that they shouldn't smoke pot? So I'm not going to smoke pot for some imagined children in the future so that honestly tell them. And, like, I, through conversations with this woman that I was dating and with a couple other, like, good friends who, like, understood where I was coming from, like, I kind of just didn't want to, but I also realized that I didn't. And that's a good enough reason to not, if you don't want to do something, you don't have to do it.
But you kind of should.
But you're kind of a narc, but sure. I mean, you're a lame hang, but you're good. Yeah, you could not want to do
that. I absolutely was. I mean, it wasn't that I wanted to be, like, cool to my girlfriend, but I did want to, like, take her experience seriously and, like, actually, like, measuredly, like, objectively, logically assess, like, where was my resistance coming. And I was like, truly, I realized that my reason, it was more just sort of border, like, baseline fear than, like, having a specific reason to not want to do it. And so I smoked pot with her for the first time and don't know if it really affected me. And I did it a couple more times. And eventually I would do it mainly, I really hadn't bought it. I've never bought weed for smoking. But I would at a party, if somebody's like, you want some, I would do it. And now I know that for me, like, eating a weed edible at home while, like, relaxing and listening to music and just lying there and feeling my body in ways that I don't actively strive to do when I'm not in that edible induced state.
Yeah.
Like, now I like that, but, like, I was, all the other times I was smoking pot, I was, like, in a group of people that was, like, a weird, you know, like, even friends.
Always, because it makes you so hypersensitive.
Yeah, it's really not a good social drug. I don't know why it's
not really a good social drug at all. Yeah, you're right.
And if you're, like, you know, results may vary, because I know there's people for whom, like, for me, it doesn't necessarily make me more creative, but there's people like Rory Scovel, a friend and hilarious comedian who can ingest marijuana and then be, in, you know, a conduit to everything.
I saw that wonderful his latest special, the documentary about the Relapse Theater, and there was one of his sets, I can't remember which one, but he was seen, like, just smoking a bowl a couple times and then just walking out there. And I've done that at open mics, being like, I'll be fine. And even at an open mic, I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm at, you know, the cellar all of a sudden. I'm like clammy and like nervous. And he just rips an hour, you know, he's incredible.
And there are, like, specific shows that I've done where it's like you smoke and then you go out and do your set. And
that
part of it
fun.
Is that the audience knows that. But even in those situations, when I've done that, I get out there and I'm like, now, am I just supposed to do jokes like regular? And this ends up being my set where I'm just like, is this you? I do this. This is what I do. Is this what you want? What am I to do?
As an audience member, you kind of want them to be like all goofy and high because you're like, that's the gimmick. And then, but as a comedian, you're like, I don't want to be goofy and high because then you know I'm high.
Yeah.
it's a conflict, you know, it's a battle.
Oh, yeah. And so then while I was in my mid-20s, somewhere around 25-ish, a couple years after that, I was like, okay, so pot, not my favorite thing, but also not a super harmful thing for me, not a dangerous, you know, fear-inducing thing, just like a socially awkward thing. And then I did a music festival. I performed at a music festival on Block Island. So I was doing music and comedy at the time. I was sort of just getting into comedy. I had started more aspiring to be a singer-songwriter.
Oh, really?
And
so I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's
so I did a
cool.
40... I did a... Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I did a 45-minute set of, like, you know, I probably, like, I don't know, 8 songs. And then in between, I would tell a few jokes because I was just starting out doing that. And afterwards, I had CDs of my music at the time, music and, like, some jokes, but mostly music. And I sold one to a guy, and he gave me a $10 bill, and it was wrapped around a psychedelic psilocybin mushroom. And I was like, oh, like, I've heard about these. And I was like, hey, can I give you this $10 back and or however many more dollars you need for more of these?
Was it a snake in a trench coat, Mike, or was it a person?
It was a very nice snake. Snakes get such a bad rap. Snakes are just like, eat apples. An apple a day keeps the doctor away is good advice, except when it's from a snake and it's a particular apple and maybe it's a pomegranate and who knows. But and that story is metaphorical in lots of other ways. But I I remember that. So I had I and the same woman that I was with at the time, she was there as well, and we got these mushrooms and we did them, and maybe a couple of the other people there did them, and then we're just on this island that, like, you walk around. It's like you can walk around the whole island. It's only like a couple miles around. And it was like there was people at a party, but then also you could just walk outside and be kind of in nature. And I remember it was the first time, that was sort of, the first psychedelic experience that I had.
That
and
sounds
I was,
perfect. Like literally a perfect place to do
it. Was very good.
That.
Yeah. And so then I felt like, whereas I could do it with people, like I'm happy, like, my favorite place to do mushrooms is like with a person I love, in a natural environment, in a relaxing, a nice time and space, a good set and setting, as they say. And also, if somebody's at a party and they're like, do you want some mushrooms? And you have to do them now because we're getting on a plane tomorrow. But like, sure, why not? And that I can, like, now that I know how I am with mushrooms, I can, generally speaking, and if they know, like, this is the dosage, like, great, then I can do this and have a reasonable experience. And so I did probably mushrooms a few times a year, from when I was 25 until the present. Like, I probably don't do them that often anymore, but every once in a while. But then, so I'm 42 now, and so I think I did ayahuasca for the first time when I was, maybe like 7 years ago or something.
Okay.
Years ago. And so my mid-30s, and I had smoked DMT once before that.
Wow.
And
before it was cool then, right? Before we had really hit the airwaves.
Before the Vice articles came out.
Yeah,
for sure. Do you guys know Shane Moss?
I do know Shane Moss.
I do know Shane Moss, yes.
Yeah, Shane's a very good friend of mine. We started out together around the same time in Boston, and he got, he'd been, doing psychedelics much longer than I, and he got in, he has a documentary called, I think, Psychonautics, or Psychonauts, that I think. And is on Amazon about his experiences with various, he's done a show called A Good Trip, all about variously. He has like a DMT TED Talk, essentially, that's
and it toured,
several
right?
hours
toured
long.
Around the whole country. I remember seeing the flyers were incredible, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Ramin Nazer, wonderful artist friend of us, and just beautiful, like, a conduit of the human experience and more.
I love the way you describe people. That's such
a conduit of the human experience.
If someone said that about me, I would gush. I would literally gush.
We are all that, so you are that too. But
stop
right
it,
now, with respect to this, him first. And I remember, so Ramin made like a coloring book to go along with Shane's psychedelic tour that I hope gets to be like recorded and released someday for everybody to get to see, because it is, Shane is a master of comedy and like this, science and self-exploration. And so, he had been smoking DMT for a while, pretty frequently, and had me do it one time, and he offered it, and I accepted, and it was real weird, and I didn't know exactly what was going on, and it reminded me of a salvia experience that I had had, which was also real weird, and at the time, I think, not one of my favorites, one of my less favorite, mind changing, and like,
I've never done salvia. I've only heard like
negative
kind of weird things.
Yeah.
Have you done it, Kenyon? You strike me as a kid who would have tried it.
It's like my first drug. It's like my drug of choice. I drank when I got smoked when I got off work. No, I never tried it, but everyone I know that I've talked to is like, it's like a weird story. It's not like, man, it was a lot of fun. It was like the wall turned into Muppets and they attacked me.
Like, it's like always been like, or like, but my buddy was like, I was a lightning bolt, but it wasn't like a peaceful one. I was like,
Like your regular thunderstorm, clouds, the sky opens and, a peaceful lightning bolt coming down, your classic lightning piece. It's not like on the Flash's chest. That's when that represents justice. But but then when I did ayahuasca for the first time, which also, like, DMT is the active ingredient in ayahuasca, I felt like, where DMT might feel like an eternity or an infinity, but takes place in, like, 10 to 20 minutes.
Right.
an ayahuasca ceremony takes about, I think of it as like, it's maybe, you know, 3 to 5 hours, and the same infinity is at least, you know, stretched out gradually over that 3 to 5 hours.
That's a lot
and
of
it
infinity.
Comes on, yeah, it comes on more gradually. And I mean, sometimes it comes on suddenly and it is very powerful. But then what the first two times I did it, they were these beautiful ethereal experiences that sometimes they talk about, like in Peruvian culture or lore. Wow. They have, my understanding is that they have, like, there's the heavenly realm, the earthly realm, and then like the nether realm, the realm of the dead. And that sometimes why you might, you know, like my first ones were all heavenly realm. It was just like soaring like the condor, which represents it. And then the cat, or like, I think the is it the panther or the what? Some jungle cat that represents the earthly realm, and then the nether realm is represented by, you might hear sometimes people talk about being visited by snakes trying to sell them apples.
Oh, there you go.
And so you might get snake imagery, you might get cat imagery, you might get bird imagery. And so my first several were just beautiful, kind of like, I mean, these experiences, I did pay money to have the experience for them, but they were kind of like the drug dealer giving me the good stuff for free. And they're like, hey, if you like this, come on back. And then next time it'll cost you a little bit in comfort, but still, like, the meaningfulness of the experiences that I would have that would become, you know, sometimes emotionally, psychologically, sometimes physically, and otherwise painful or, you know, difficult, challenging in ways. And then sometimes the experience would be like a mix of all those things. But yeah, I feel like it. Whatever you're afraid of, you're probably, you know, either you might be right, and also you probably, I mean, look, I can't speak for anyone. Like you do it if you're called to do it, and like do some research and find out, you know, the best ways and places and practices.
Because everything that you've explained about it has sounded incredible. I mean, you said heavenly, and then you said cat imagery. I'm a huge cat. I would love to. I had a buddy who also did ayahuasca, and he raved about, like you said, he was like, I turned into a panther, and I was like, running through the jungle, and I was like, well, that sounds very fun, and maybe I figure out why I need to go up on stage every night and talk about my penis. Like, maybe we'll figure out why
solve it.
Nick is Nick, you know?
Yeah.
It's very... So, you have jokes about all this kind of stuff in numerous albums, and your parents sound like people who would really, like, support you in whatever you decided to do. So, was there, like, a conflict of them hearing material about you doing drugs?
Great question. I remember
comes from personal experience. That's why.
Sure. Well, I honestly don't like. Both of my parents have seen like the show that became AKA, which is I was doing for a couple years and brought to Edinburgh when it was called All Killing Aside, and you know, the general themes are love, compassion, and not murdering. And and so I talk about ayahuasca on that, and I've talked about mushrooms on other shows that I've done. And so my parents have both seen that show, and they've listened to that album. And I also haven't had extensive conversations with them about the content of that material. Like, okay. I know that I don't know, but I know that my mom at one point asked me after a show, what are mushrooms? Like, she just didn't have.
God. Oh, you're so lucky.
So she's gone.
Yeah, she's
too far gone to.
I mean, and so, and I have had more recently experiences with my mom talking about, like, over the past year during the beginning of the pandemic, and what is it? Yeah, and also my grandmother died right at the beginning of the pandemic. It was my mom's mom. So I started talking to my mom a lot more for both of these reasons.
Right.
And so we ended up talking about more substantial things, like, you know, and so this came up at one point, and my mom does, like, she is very supportive of me and loves me, and, you know, obviously is like, I am a free human, autonomous adult individual as much as anyone is, as much as some people are, as much as I am, at least, or maybe not even that. And so I'm, you know, she knows that, and there are things that, like, if we were each other, we would live our lives potentially slightly differently, for we do live our lives slightly differently as ourselves. And so, yeah, my mom has expressed to me that, like, that mind-altering, you know, psychedelic substances are not, if she were in charge of my experience now, she would probably still be like, don't do that. But she, and so it's sort of at a,
it's
you
at
know,
an
like
impact,
a don't ask,
because you're
don't
a grown
tell.
Ass man.
Yeah, it's
sort
like, what
thing.
Are you going
to
do? Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
So my mom also doesn't really like, here, this is going to be a fun joke for a moment, but so my mom doesn't really, she's into clean comedy. She doesn't love swearing. So to her, I'm a grown butt man.
That is a cute joke. That's
grown
one of the cutest
man.
Cutest jokes on the. It's been a cute episode, actually.
Yeah, pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Just a nice, nice lecture about who psychedelics and who we are.
Yeah. So, Mike, do you have anything else you want to plug besides your album before we head out?
Oh, sure. I mean, do you want me to tell you one quick dad story?
Let's do a quick dad story.
Yeah. Please
so,
do.
Like I said, my dad and I have not extensively talked about psychedelics or what have you. So I feel like we're in a similar place. Or maybe he just does them all the time and doesn't tell me about it. But this is a quick thing that I really like this story that I was out to lunch with him at a diner. And there were two menus. One was the brunch menu, one was the lunch menu. And they both had, because brunch, or maybe it was brunch and breakfast, whatever it was, they both had omelets. And there was a section of omelets, and it was the same exact omelets listed on each menu. But one of the menus called the section of omelets fluffy omelets, and the other one called it tasty and fluffy omelets. And my dad looks at it and he's like, well, I think if I'm going to get one of those, I'm going to get the tasty and fluffy, not just the fluffy. And I was like, Dad, that's pretty funny. And he's like, well, you know, I got it from you. And I like the idea that my dad inherited comedy from me in a way that I'm like, and I, it's sort of like in the one of the first Batman, I think the first Batman movie with Michael Keaton, where the Joker and Batman are, there's like a thing where they're like, I created you. Like, I wouldn't exist without you, but you wouldn't exist without me.
Exactly.
Like, which one of us created the other? And I'm like, I wouldn't exist without my dad for sure, but perhaps my dad wouldn't have made that joke without me. And my mom also has told me that since she watched tons of my Zoom shows and like online shows over the past year, because we couldn't see each other as much in person, she's like, you're my activity. And now she's like looking for jokes all the time. Like, she's a funny person and has always been a funny person, but has not actively tried to hey, I said something on purpose that was fun. She's like, you make me want to be a funnier person. So I guess I'm just
going
to plug my mom's social media.
She's on TikTok right now, dancing her butt off.
Absolutely. I was like, is butt the word that I used? It is 100% dancing her key. her derriere. So to answer your question of what I would love to plug, in addition to like the album, AKA is my honestly, it's my most recent and the work that I'm proudest and happiest with, and sort of I think represents like what I'm doing with comedy.
It's
the
fantastic.
Most right now. I really appreciate it. And you can also, of course, follow me on social media at Mike Kaplan, MYQKAPLAN. If you put Mike Kaplan in anywhere, you'll find all my albums and specials and podcasts. My two podcasts are called Broccoli and Ice Cream and The Faucet. And I also have a newsletter that I send out every week for free, and you can sign up and subscribe for more. And there's always several jokes and other fun units in it, and it's at mikekaplan.substack.com. So,
Mike.
All that, whatever you like.
Well, phenomenal. Thank you so much again for doing this. This was so fun and informative. I think I learned a lot.
Oh, thank you for inviting me and asking all these questions. Thank you for asking so many questions that I could talk and talk about.
Absolutely,
so,
that's my job.
Really appreciate it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing it, man.